This is Studio 2. I'm Kevin McCrory in for Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Hello. Day two of working together here on Studio 2, Kevin. And today, you're a reader. I'm a reader.
Oh, yeah.
And today we're going to be talking about reading, okay? And I know a lot of our listeners are readers, even if they don't identify as readers, okay? And there have been a lot of headlines. They've been saying that Americans overall are reading fewer books than they have in the past. There's also headlines that say younger people, specifically students, don't read actual books.
Right.
Which is very interesting. And professors, they say that a lot of these students came to college without ever having read a full book. And so people are panicking. And so we're going to ask the question today, and we ask you to join the conversation. Have your reading habits changed over the years? And what have you seen in the younger generation? You can call us 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. Kevin, you're a dad.
Mm-hmm.
Do your kids read?
Oh, they do. Yeah, my kids are big readers. I asked my son last night. He estimated, my 10-year-old, that he read 300 books this year.
Whoa.
And I said, well, are we talking about like baby board books here? What are you talking
about? 10-page books?
No, these are real books.
He
legit is walking around with a big, thick book a lot. And he's trying to sneak reading all the time. Like, that's the thing.
Sneak read.
The number one thing he'll get in trouble for, honestly, is not going to bed at night. And he's sneak reading under the covers.
With a flashlight?
He's trying to get his laptop in there so he can read books online. Things like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're readers.
Yeah, that's great. I grew up reading. My grandmother was a teacher. She taught phonics. Can you believe it? I started reading at age 3. I loved books. The library was like my happy place. And, you know, it was nothing. I remember one summer I got like 63 pizza certificates. You got a pizza certificate for every book you read. And I was so proud to take the entire family to get pizza.
I think,
I was a reader.
And I think what we're doing today is these anecdotal articles that we've seen, like, is there truly a moral panic that we should all have about this? Or is there something deeper going on here that we need to unpack?
And what does reading do for us?
And what does reading do for us? And let's get some great book recommendations while we're at it.
Yay.
So we're going to get to all that in the
experts.
Main segment of the show with a couple of great bookwormy experts.
I love that. And again, join the conversation. Have your reading habits changed over the years? And what are you seeing with the younger generation? Our number is 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And our trio of news stories.
Well, before that, we got to mention, it's Thursday.
I forgot.
And it's a DJ of the day day. So we know every Thursday we ask our listeners to try to pick that song that's going to play at the end of the show that kind of is on the theme of the show. So today, think reading, love of books, maybe some song that taps into the panic over the future of the younger generation. You have to get your pick in by 12:30. And also remember, this is not a democracy. It doesn't matter
Producer
if
Paige
10
is in charge.
People pick the same song. It's whatever wins the heart of Producer Paige. But as you said, get those picks in. Studio2@whyy.org. You got to get them in by 12:30. But before we get to the main event, as we always do, let's do our trio
of news stories. I feel like we should have like
stories.
A theme song for the trio or something. We need to
I
come
agree.
Up with that. Go ahead.
So let's start with a story we read in the Inquirer this morning. Philadelphia has been a sanctuary city since 2016, and that executive order remains in place. But some immigrant advocate groups are concerned that Mayor Sherrill Parker hasn't reasserted her commitment more strongly to that policy. And of course, this is all happening as President-elect Trump has promised to undertake the largest mass deportation operation in history. So a reminder, what is a sanctuary city? Essentially, municipalities refusing to work with or limit their cooperation with federal immigration authorities. This was a central issue for Mayor Jim Kenney. Mm-hmm. His administration fought and won a major lawsuit in 2018 during the first Trump term that would have forced law enforcement officers to carry out these federal laws. And clearly, as immigration has become a top issue in the past election, there's a renewed focus on what's going to happen at the city level. Conservatives will say that policies like these are what contribute to the polarizing rhetoric on the immigration debate. Essentially, if there's undocumented immigrants who have committed serious crimes, why wouldn't cities work with the feds to help detain them like any other suspected criminal? But then, of course, you have the pushback from the immigrant rights groups who say there's going to be abuses of power.
Yeah. And we should put this in context. I mean, Philadelphia is home to 47,000 undocumented people who live in the city. I've covered all sorts of marginalized communities. And this is a very marginalized community. A lot of time, they're very vulnerable to labor abuses, vulnerable to crimes, because if they're afraid that they could get turned into ICE, they won't report a crime done to them. And so people will target this community for crime, which is one of the reasons why, you know, Philadelphia was a sanctuary city. But, you know, the Trump administration has threatened financial repercussions and legal challenges for sanctuary cities. And, you know, they're exploring right now whether or not it's legal to limit federal funding. And so there's probably some reservation. I don't know if this is true from, you know, the Parker administration about she said she supports it during her campaign. But, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. Right. You don't know what the penalty will be. But there's going to be protests around this. You know, Philadelphia, very left leaning city. So we'll see what happens. But again, she has in the past expressed support for Philadelphia's sanctuary city status.
She's also been, I think, much different than Kenny on law and order issues.
Yes,
and she's
she
been
has.
More of that centrist. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting, basically, her non, you know, making a big proclamation so far is somewhat telling. But again, we'll see where it goes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like we said, the order is still on the books. So it's not like anything has actually changed. We're just talking about tone.
Yeah, tone. And by the way, I was at an event for all the civil rights lawyers. It was the Justice Ball. And she was there with all the civil rights lawyers saying, you know, she was that, you know, the city was going to be lawyered up. So we don't know. And she hasn't reasserted. But that doesn't mean she won't reassert this position. Speaking about the mayor recently signed a bill into law. It's called Get Out the Bike Lane. Now, this new law prohibits cars from stopping in bike lanes at any time for any reason. If you are caught stopping in bike lanes or standing or parking in a bike lane in Center City, University City, $125 fine. Okay. $75 in other parts of the city. Before this law, the old law, you could sit in a bike lane, Kevin, up to 20 minutes before you would get fined. And I don't know if you remember this, but during the summer, Parker came on our show and we got inundated with emails. Mm-hmm. We got calls from cyclist advocates. And this was very close to the death, the tragic death of 30-year-old Children's Hospital of Philadelphia doctor Barbara Freitas, who was killed in a collision in Center City. She was riding in a bike lane and was tragically killed. And there was so much pressure, and the pressure has been mounting over the number of cyclist deaths and a number of pedestrian deaths. And so this is sort of an answer to that.
Yeah. And, you know, I've biked around the city a lot. I've run around the city a lot. I've also been a driver in the city a lot. So I know it's real out there when you're a cyclist or a runner trying to navigate the city safely. I also know that, as a driver, it's sometimes hard to see everything and you know, basically act safely on the roads. So I think this is an interesting update. You do have some residents saying that, you know, essentially there might be elderly, disabled, or people with young children who often use these bike lanes to load from, and how is this going to affect them? And you can understand their concerns. So there's a lot of different viewpoints and factors at issue here.
Yeah, but the cyclists, the advocates for cyclists who and pedestrians say this is a win, but there's always going to be tension
in
a city of lots of people. So back to you.
Yeah, our final story in the news roundup today. If you've been on social media the past 24 hours, you know you can't escape the omnipresent dominance of the Spotify Wrapped and the Apple Replay. It's this now annual December tradition where the tech companies, they remind us just how much they're tracking everything that we do, Cherry. And they give us this, they spit us out, like, you know, this little tally of who were our most listened to songs, most listened to artists of the year.
And by the way, I was today years old when I heard about this.
Okay.
So, boom.
But you got yours today, right?
I did.
You logged into Apple. You use Apple.
I did. I didn't even know this existed.
What was your top artist or song?
My top artist is Jacob Collier, who is a British singer and songwriter, Grammy nominated indie jazz artist, who I actually first heard about on NPR anchoring ATC. And I fell in love with this guy.
So I got to tell you, this is what happened for me.
Yeah, okay? Tell me.
I know exactly what song I put this I in quotation marks, have listened to the most this year.
Okay.
Spotify tells me 52 times to be precise. Let's play the clip.
Let it go. Oh, my.
Okay. Okay. So I have fallen into the trap that many parents on Spotify report. Their kids are taking over the Spotify Wrapped, and all my cred goes down the drain because of my 5 and 3 year old who can't get enough of the Frozen.
But I'm saying
soundtrack.
Only 52 times, though. I mean, kids, if you guys are listening, you need to double that. Like, right. Come on.
Now, look, this is what happened, too. So then I'm talking about this at the family dinner last night, and I have a 10-year-old boy and a 7-year-old boy, and they immediately get, like, mad that the little sister's pick won.
Oh,
and they say, you know what we can do for next year? We're going to play one of our favorite songs from Modest Mouse. They're big Modest Mouse fans.
Mm-hmm.
It's 10 seconds long. So, like, if we just play this over and over and over again, we will win the Spotify.
So they're
going
to double that.
Yes, this is it.
So you're going to be hearing.
So that's it. If you hear those trumpets coming from my house, Cherry, what it means is the tech companies have won. Because my kids, my 10 and 7-year-old, are just trying to game the tech company so that they can win the Spotify Wrapped.
I got to give your kids some credit, though. They read a lot of books, and now they're learning how to game tech companies. Come on now. These are little geniuses. I love it. I love it. By the way, if you did Spotify Wrapped and the Studio 2 podcast is in your top 5 of the year, email us at studio2@whyy.org. We want you to have the screen cap, and we'll send whoever responds first a beautiful orange and black Studio 2 mug. And I have to say, our Studio 2 mug is really nice, all right? It's orange on the inside. I mean, it makes your coffee look way better. I'm telling you, you want this. So I hope we are in your Spotify Wrapped or your Apple Replay's top podcast.
So we got DJ of the Day you got to do. Get your pick in for that. And we're also asking you, have your reading habits changed over the years? And what have you seen in the younger generation? Give us a call, 888-477-9499 or studio2@whyy.org. We get all that after the break.
I like the song.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCrory in for Avi Wolfman-Arrett. A recent article on The Atlantic was headlined, "The Elite College Students Who Can't Read Books." It featured a quote from a professor who said of their students, "It's not like I can say over the next 3 weeks I expect you to read the Iliad, because they're not going to do it."
Oh no, they will not. Zoom out, though, and you see a larger trend of people of all ages reading fewer books.
So are we becoming a nation of Homer Simpson ignoramuses?
All right, brain. You don't like me, and I don't like you. But let's just do this, and I can get back to killing you with beer. It's a deal.
Or are reports of reading's demise wildly exaggerated? We're going to hash it all out with a couple of bookwormy experts who can help shed light on how concerned we should be. And also, later in the show, we'll get some recommendations for great books to read right now.
We've got Ron Charles, who reviews books and writes the book club newsletter for The Washington Post, and he's also the book critic for CBS Sunday Morning. Welcome, Ron.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also joining us is Shannon Reed, an English professor at the University of Pittsburgh and author of Why We Read on Bookworms, Libraries, and Just One More Page Before Lights Out. Shannon, welcome to Studio 2.
It's so great to be here. Thank you.
And we want to invite you, our listener, give us a call. How have your reading habits changed? And what have you seen in the younger generation? The number, 888-477-9499, or email studio2@whyy.org.
I want to read this email from Jamie, who says, "Reading is a powerful tool for recalibrating my thought processes, particularly when I face the complexities of different academic subjects. Diving into a book allows me to shift my focus and refresh my mind before tackling the specific content of my studies." And I want to start the conversation talking about our younger people, our students. And this whole panic are saying that younger people are not reading as much as folks in other generations. I want to start with you, Shannon. What is the truth? Should we be worried? Are young people not reading books? What's going on?
It's a really great question. And of course, it's very subjective because some students read all the time. There are people who identify as bookworms or readers, almost like a fandom now, right? Like that's their thing that they do. Like some of us watch Parks and Rec over and over. They just love to read books. So those folks are obviously reading tons and tons of books. But I do think that in general, perhaps reading a book, like a physical object, has declined a little bit in the last few years because we spend a lot of time reading other places on our phones, on our screens, we listen to audiobooks. So yeah, there is a little bit of a decline.
Should we be worried, though, Shannon?
I don't think that we need to be worried. I think it's a great question. I just kind of remember when I was in college, I read all the time because I was assigned to read so many things. But I did relatively little reading for pleasure. And once I left college and kind of got back into or became an adult and had an adult life, I wanted to bring reading back into the hobbies that I had and the practices that I did. So I feel like while reading has declined, I also think that looking specifically at college students is maybe not the right demographic because they do read all the time. That's just assigned reading. And maybe they want to do something else with their free time. That seems okay to me.
Ron, do you have a similar take on this?
Well, I haven't been teaching for about 30 years, but what Professor Reed says sounds exactly right to me too. And back then we were all complaining, the kids aren't reading enough. It was the same it was the same anxiety.
Yeah. You know what? Our producer Andreas Copes went out to Drexel this morning to talk to the younger generation directly. So let's hear from the younger generation directly now with a clip.
I think there's just a lot of other things that take up people's minds these days.
I think it might be because of social media, because it's just other things keeping people entertained, so they don't read as much anymore.
Technology, like you're always on your phone or TV or something like that, so that probably takes away time to use reading.
I mean, not to get too caught up in the philosophy of it, but I think people are mostly trying to like make ends meet. I think it's hard to find time to just sit down and either enjoy a book just a little, let alone like to do like a full deep take into something.
So that was a few students on Drexel's campus this morning, Sophie, Nick, and Ethan. I'm wondering though, they're talking about themes that clearly, if you're just thinking about this common sense wise, like, yeah, we're just on our phones so much. There's so much happening, on TikTok, on Insta, or whatever, that like you can easily sit there and get trapped in the doom scroll for 30 minutes and go, wait, where did my time go?
Yeah.
And maybe that time used to be time you spent reading. I guess I'm curious to get your take, Professor, on how that plays into things.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think social media is designed to be addictive. I know I'm on my phone all the time. Like it does things. It beeps and it flashes. And I'm like, oh, what's this? What's this new notification? And a paper book doesn't do any of those things. But I think what I hear from my students, and granted, I do teach creative writing, so I'm teaching people who are more interested in books in a lot of different ways. But what I hear from my students, and I suspect everybody on this conversation agrees with, is that books do something different than just scrolling and looking at the latest tweets and looking at the latest Instagram posts can do. Books give you this sort of opportunity to check out from your own life for, 5 minutes, a half an hour, however long it is, and rest your own anxieties and your own cares and concerns and be in someone else's life and world for a little bit of time. I don't think that scrolling can do that. I love scrolling. I'm not against scrolling, but I just don't think it does what a book does.
Yeah, I want to bring in a caller. We have Virginia from Broomall, Pennsylvania, who has a comment. Virginia, you're on Studio 2. Are you a reader? Has it changed over time? Tell us your story.
Oh, well, I'm a big time reader, but what I called to talk about were the kids. I go to synagogue every Saturday morning with a big canvas bag full of books, and the kids come looking for me, even toddlers. They're looking for my book today. And I've had kids then tell me, oh, I don't know which one to choose, two of my favorite authors. I mean, they know things like that, and it's just wonderful. I spent a lot of time at the Goodwill buying books to bring with me to synagogue.
I love that. Thank you so much. That's Virginia from Broomall, Pennsylvania.
And we were saying, you know, before we got into the main segment about my own kids' mm-hmm. habits, and we've done a lot to, I guess, shelter them from the social media and all the tech at this point, but they're 10 and younger. And I definitely fear, as a parent, like, there's going to come a time where they're going to have access to all this stuff, and how is that going to change everything? And, you know, what the caller just said about the synagogue, like that's beautiful and amazing. But, you know, we just know anecdotally, at least, mm-hmm. you know, Debbie, our producer, was talking about, you know, one of her kids, just it just went down and down and down when they used that phone. So I guess I'm wondering from our guests, Ron, you can weigh in, like, You seem to think, hey, this was just always the way it is. And of course, there's always going to be some tsk, younger generation thing happening. But like, has there been a real difference or no?
Well, you're right about that slump around middle school and into high school. That's been confirmed by the latest data from the Library of Congress. And I love Virginia and bringing the books for the little kids. That's just great. There's been so much effort to get little kids into books, and it's really working. I just got a press release about Dave Pilkey's new Dog Man book.
Sure.
First printing this week, 5 million copies.
Wow. I mean,
that's more copies than every other book on our bestseller list this week has ever sold. So little kids are doing great, but we've got to watch what's happening in middle school and the early high school years.
Yeah. And Ron, when we zoom out, I mean, because, you know, your life changes. You know, kids, you have a lot of time. Your parents, you know, they want to occupy you, but not, you can't necessarily be online because you don't have a phone yet. So you read, right? But as you get older, things change. What is happening in the book industry? Does it seem like, when you look at book sales, is it really changing? Is it showing people are reading less, or is it showing something different?
The book sales are like steady to slowly down, but not in a panicky way. And there's a huge rise in books for young people. Romanticy is just exploding.
Romance is exploding.
Book talk is huge with young people. That's talking about books on TikTok. There's lots of these celebrity book clubs online and on TV now that we never had in the past. So there is a lot of good news.
Yeah, I'm a big audio book person. I've had a subscription to audiobooks.com for many years. I just want to get your take. Does that count as reading? Because I listen to my books.
Definitely that counts as reading. And audiobooks, I'm so glad you mentioned, because that is the rare growth segment of the market. Year after year after year, those have been double-digit percentage gains. Audiobooks have just exploded.
Yeah, and Shannon, looked like you wanted to add something to that.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, my students ask me all the time if it's okay to read by listening to a book. And they're so worried and scared that that's not authentic reading. And I of course, I'm always like, yes, however you consume the book, that's fantastic. Just, you know, listen to it, read it. It's part of our discussion. It's part of our class. Let's learn it together. But I also wanted to say what you all were talking about with the middle school kind of slump there, as Ron said so nicely. I think the other factor in there is something that's much, much older than social media, which is in late elementary school, middle school, and high school is when students start getting told that they need to be reading certain books and getting certain messages and understanding them in certain ways. They start getting tested. They start mm-hmm. having to write essays. Reading becomes assigned. And that is almost de facto a joyless experience. I mean, you might read a book that you like, but then you have to go write a 5-paragraph essay about like what
book
the theme is.
Reading is work.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about like some.
Yeah, and I think that if you start to think about reading as work, even if it's subconscious for you, it doesn't feel as fun. It's just scrolling. Like, of course, you're going to reach for the scrolling instead, because you're supposed to be reading certain books and there's supposed to be a certain level of difficulty and you're supposed to understand them perfectly. And that's just a lot of pressure.
You want to weigh in there, Ron?
Yeah. Another thing I would add is in high school, the shift away from reading whole books, which is very enjoyable, to reading excerpts, which is joyless, I think. And so kids aren't having that experience of reading, you know, an entire book that they might really dive into. Instead, it's just an excerpt after an excerpt after an excerpt, because that's what can be efficiently tested, which is a terrible design.
Yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to get into. Like, we're talking about, you know, this potential decline that we're seeing and what we diagnose as the thing behind it. And you see that a lot in the articles. It has to do with standardized testing and the way that we're emphasizing what counts and what doesn't count in information and knowledge, essentially. And there doesn't seem to be a premium on, like, being able to appreciate a long novel and then talk about the finer humanity themes of such novel. It's more like, read the excerpt, grasp the point, fill in the dot. Is that your experience, Shannon?
Yeah, I was just nodding in agreement because I was just thinking about my own experience. As a bookworm who absolutely loves to read, I just recently picked up Stephen King's 11/22/63, which is a fantastic novel, a time travel novel about the JFK assassination. And I was reading it on Kindle, so I didn't realize how long it was until I was like, I felt like I had been reading it for a while and it wasn't really moving. And so I finally looked up and it's almost 900 pages.
Whoa.
And I had a moment of sort of panic of like, oh, that's such a long commitment. And I'm not going to be able to add that to my Goodreads queue so quickly. Like I could read three other novels in the same amount of time. And I just think it's maybe a societal cultural thing of we're just like, there's so much culture and media to consume that we're just pushing ourselves to like cram as much in as we can. And it was quite delightful to just sort of step back a little bit and just lose myself in this quite long but really excellent novel.
We were talking before about gaming Spotify. You're thinking about gaming Goodreads. Yeah,
I love it.
Let's bring in another caller. How about
yeah,
Sherry?
We have John
from Allentown.
Yeah,
John on line two. What's your question or comment?
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that, you know, I think there's something to be said. As a teacher myself, I find that students, it's not that they aren't reading, certainly all the scrolling that they're doing on their cell phones, they're doing plenty of reading, but their reading comprehension skills have really declined. And so as a teacher, I find that, yeah, you can't necessarily assign a great masterwork or even just textbook chapters and expect that the students will be able to read it and actually understand the concepts and the vocabularies because they're so used to, on social media, the notion of, you know, really shallow thoughts about nothing more than social interaction. So that would be my contribution.
Thank you so much, John from Allentown. And this begs the question because I also teach at the college level at Temple University, and I find that my students don't necessarily do the reading. They rather take notes in class, take pictures of slides on the screen, watch a video. They don't necessarily do the actual reading. And so, Shannon, I wanted to sort of ask you, what does actually doing the reading, like sitting and reading for longer periods of time and committing to longer books, what does that do for an individual as a student, as a human?
Yeah, it's such a great question. I think that we really forget how much just being in the world of a book or a story, and that doesn't just mean the plot or the characters, but just the author's worldview, the point of view of the narrator, the perspective, maybe something that we haven't even considered or thought about before. And you can only get that by letting yourself be in the world of the writing. It's sort of hard to articulate, but I think all of us have had that feeling of escaping into a book or a story like that. And so I'm always sort of pushing my students to try to have that happen for themselves. I ask them, in most of my classes, I assign short stories instead of novels because they're writing short stories as well. And I'll ask them to commit to reading a story two or three times before they start trying to generate a response to it. And they always look at me like I have asked them the most insane possible thing at the beginning of the semester because, wow, I'm going to read this twice? Not just once, but twice or three times. But if they do it, and most of them do, they start to see what I'm saying about how the writing opens up to you and you start to understand the choices that the author has made and the world that they're creating. If you're not sort of pressuring yourself to generate your response that you're going to write and or like kind of testing yourself about what the story is doing while you're also trying to understand the story for the first time.
I was struck by a piece that I read. It was an opinion piece in the New York Times this October. And essentially the author was kind of making the point that, like, from the point of view of the younger generation, it appears that, like, what creates success in the real world is so much, quote unquote, vibes these days. Mm. And like his quote was like, all in all, it looks as if success follows not from knowledge and skill, but from luck, hype, and access to the right companies. How will any effort in school prepare them for careers in which apparently effort is not rewarded? Universities themselves offer little solace. They constantly promote the idea that a degree is about earning power above all else. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, do you guys have a take on, like, is there something larger culturally that's happening that we're signaling to the younger generation, like, that doesn't really matter anymore? It used to matter, but just de facto, for some reason, it just matters less now. Ron?
Well, it could be the ascension of a sexual predator and criminal to the highest office in the land might engender a certain amount of cynicism in some people.
Shannon?
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that perhaps we've become a very presentational society. I don't know if that's something we've just become or we always are, but I feel like this time period, we're very presentational. I'm on Instagram. I'm posting like the crafts that I do and the things that I bake and the book events that I have and trying to project a successful author slash professorial life. So I'm certainly guilty of it myself. I think for my students, I'm really cognizant of the fact that they're studying creative writing. So they're not necessarily going to be able to make a fantastic career out of the major that they have chosen. Mm-hmm. Very few of them are going to be able to be professional writers of any kind. So I think more about the pleasure that reading has brought me over my lifetime and hoping that I'm translating that to them as well. I can't guarantee them a salary or a book deal, but I can give them a skill set that's going to bring them a lot of joy and pleasure if they can continue to dip into it over their lifetime.
Yeah, and I want to...
And if they post on Instagram about it too, that's great. Good for them. Why not?
And I want to invite you, our listener, to join the conversation. Give us a call. The big question is, how have your reading habits changed and what have you seen in the younger generation? Our number is 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. I want to read a couple emails from our audience. We got an email from Aaron who says, I'm reading more as a 37-year-old when I discovered the Libby app is compatible with the Philly Public Library. All right, I got to check out the Libby app. We also got an email from Clarence who says, I am blind and do the bulk of my reading from audiobooks. I also look for books from the National Library Service for the blind and print impaired. And I'll read one more. Sandra emails, I used to love sitting down every morning with my local newspaper and taking my time with every page. It's just not the same reading papers online, and there aren't articles covering local government and news about my town. It is sad. I want to talk about the culture of reading a little bit and broaden it to not just students, but to everyone. Both Kevin and I identify as readers. And I want to talk about what that means to be a reader. And Ron, I know you're a reader. You, for a living, you get to read books. And I say get to. You get to read books and then tell us about it. And I've seen you on CBS Sunday Mornings, and you add creativity to that. And I love it. So shout out to you for making things interesting. But I want to talk about what the culture of reading looks like now in the age of social media.
It is a little antisocial. I mean, to read a book, a long book, you have to be alone, for instance. You have to be quiet. It takes time. It's not a very hip thing to do. But I think there's a lot of retro charm to that. And to talk about the value of books that Shannon was talking about is so moving to me because books are little empathy machines. Mm. For me, I was raised in an all-white, very conservative Christian community in St. Louis. I mean, I had access to nobody who wasn't just like me, and I mean nobody. And books were everything. Books were the whole world to me, and they still are, you know? I still get to be all kinds of people and go all over the world and experience all kinds of things that I never would be able to without books.
Yeah, and that takes kids, no matter what community you are in, right? You get to go see the world through a book. But I mean, identifying, though, as a reader, someone who reads. And studies have shown that people who read a lot many times don't even say, I'm a reader. Do Shannon, would you say that this culture, this identity as a reader, could you kind of describe that and what it means actually to be a reader?
Absolutely. It's something that's entirely new to me, even though now I feel very comfortable saying that I've been a reader all my life. But my students look at it, and other young people I know, and other folks on Instagram who've contacted me about my book, like they really identify as readers, which means that they care about new books that are coming out. They care about owning books. They care about supporting libraries. They care about supporting authors who are writing things that are meaningful and important to them. They go to their readings. They go to their events. And they also care about the paraphernalia of books as well. Like they have Jane Austen t-shirts, right? And they have like Nancy Drew bookmarks, and they have hats that say, don't bug me, I'm in a book right now. There's kind of like the merch with the whole thing too. So it is sort of like a fandom. I shouldn't say sort of like, I think it is a fandom for books, which is a really fascinating and lovely way to sort of commandeer our culture and make it still about reading. It's still about books.
Yeah, and we're about to take a break in just a moment. So on the other side of the break, though, we're going to get some book recommendations. Yeah. We're going to also talk about what the future of reading look like and this whole book culture on the other side of this break. So we hope that you will join the conversation. How have your reading habits changed over the years? What does reading look like for the young people in your family? 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org.
Yeah, and stick around because we got the DJ of the Day pick coming up. So you
yeah.
don't want to miss whatever our great listener picked today. Stick around for that. And again, those book recommendations are coming, so stick around.
Mm-hmm. We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Kevin McCrory in for Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Before we get back to our conversation about books and reading, we also want to shout out our next Studio 2 On the Road event.
We're calling it the Studio 2 All-Time Great Holiday Movie Spectacular Extravaganza.
What?
It's happening on Friday afternoon. That's next Friday, December 13th, 3 o'clock at the historic Newtown Theater in Bucks County.
Yes, Avi and I will be joined by two other panelists as we play clips from holiday movies. We'll debate our favorites, and then we will crown a champion with the help of our live audience. I can't wait. And we're going to have a
real crown.
There's
going to be a live band called Winter Wonder Band playing holiday tunes. This group, Cherry, is going to be tight. Great musicians.
All right. I'm looking forward to that. And it is a free event, by the way, but you got to register at whyy.org/events.
And we do want to hear from you ahead of the event. What's your favorite holiday movie of all time? Email us, studio2@whyy.org. Give us your pick, and the top vote getter will automatically make the final round at the event.
Now, if you're just joining us for this conversation, we're talking about the state of reading. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cherry, we've heard a lot from our listeners so far, and let me invite you to join the conversation at home. 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. How have your reading habits changed, and what have you seen in the younger generation? Well, on cue, Caroline from mm-hmm. Springfield, Pennsylvania calls in. She's a student in her senior year. And Caroline, it sounds like you have an opinion on your fellow students.
Yes, I do. So as you said, I'm a senior in college, and I've noticed throughout my college career over the past 4 years, across years, across studies and disciplines, that there has been a pretty widespread issue where people just don't have that same kind of functional literacy that I kind of saw and expected in high school and growing up. I think that there's a lot of young people that are just so attached to their screens and that are just so attached to their devices that they simply don't read, and they have lost a lot of those basic grammatical and reading skills.
Thank you so much. That's Caroline from Springfield, Pennsylvania. And I want to read this email from Victoria, who says, audiobooks are not the same as reading whatsoever, by the way. But she also says the literacy level of high school students and college students to her is gravely concerning. She says, my sister-in-law teaches college-level English to freshmen, and they can't write papers. The growing dependency on smart tablets and phones to read for us is a disservice to building basic reading and writing skills. And so, Shannon, I want you, we talked about what reading does for you, but critical thinking skills. I mean, how is it really? You joked earlier, Kevin, about whether or not we're going to become a country of ignoramuses.
Homer Simpson. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what do you lose by not consuming books in a more traditional way?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'm not a scientist, so I can't tell you, you know, like what part of the brain is not activated when you're not reading. But I do think that we lose the ability to create the empathy that Ron was talking about. But the empathy isn't just sort of like, oh, I didn't know that other people had lives different than mine. The empathy is also like the ability to follow a character over the decisions that they're making about their lives. The empathy is also about reading a work of nonfiction and being able to understand the flawed choices that a character and even a true crime book may have made, to sort of identify with and see the choices that we might have made in the same situation. Those are all activating the critical thinking portion of our brain in a way that I think just sort of talking through a scenario or being told a scenario engages us differently. When you read a book, you have to follow the arc or the plot of the characters that you're reading. There's no chance. You may be reading it and be thinking like, no, don't do that. That's not what I would do. But you have to just follow what the characters are actually doing, whether they're real people or fictional characters, and learn from that experience and think about all of that critically in a way that's just not possible in another medium.
And what Professor Reed's talking about is crucial for a democracy. I mean, we're being asked to make really complicated decisions about long-term debt, healthcare, climate change. If you can't sustain an argument, if you can't read a complicated text, you really can't make a decision about these issues that we're being asked to, you know, figure out.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's start here today. We've been talking about maybe some people who are out of the habit of reading, but how do we get back in the habit of reading and develop these skills? And so we're going to turn to both Ron, you and
Shannon, yes.
and see, you know, what are your recommendations for books? What's going to get people jazzed again about reading? So how about we start with Ron?
Yeah.
I think James is by Percival Everett is just an incredible book. It'll be familiar to a lot of people because it's a re-envisioning of Huckleberry Finn from the slave Jim's point of view. It's not very long. It's very dramatic. It's sometimes funny. It's sometimes horrible and scary. It's very entertaining, but it's a really high quality novel already recognized by a bunch of awards this year.
Wow. And so is that how you sort of jump back in, Ron? You just say, you know what, I'm going to commit. This is, you just said, not very long versus the 900 pager that Shannon was reading from Stephen King. What was it? 11/22/63. Is that so? How do you recommend find something really interesting and just commit to something shorter to build up your confidence?
Definitely. And I hope people don't feel any guilt about this. They should read things they want to read that they find engaging. There's no reason trying to get yourself back into reading by reading something dreadful and homeworky.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think James was a fantastic novel. And as Ron said, one of the reasons why it is so approachable is it builds on The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. So if you have read that book, if you knew that book, which many people read in high school, or at least know a little bit of the plot of, maybe you saw Big River on Broadway, you can really latch that into your experience of reading James as well, which is a really lovely thing.
How about your pick?
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Go ahead with your pick.
Oh, yeah. I personally am very drawn to books that take place in locations that I'm familiar with. I live in Pittsburgh, and I'm always really happy to read a book that has some part of Western Pennsylvania as its location. And since you all are in Philly, I was thinking perhaps somebody would want to pick up The Silver Linings Playbook or In Her Shoes by Jennifer Weiner, the books that take place in Philadelphia or the environs and kind of allow you to picture the world that they're happening in without too much of a heavy lift in doing that. I also love the novel Sandwich by Catherine Newman, which came out this year. It's short. It's maybe like 150 pages. And it's a very conversational narrator, just sort of telling you her story about a family that goes to Cape Cod every summer. It's like incredibly low stakes in the best possible way. You just immediately are drawn to this woman and her story. And I also am really loving the Slow Horses books by Mitch Herron, which are spy novels. I love a spy novel, and they are by no means great literature. But he is a fantastic writer, both in keeping the plot moving and just on a sentence level. It's just like really good writing. So the other tip I sometimes give my students when they want to read outside of their like natural experience or tendency is to read something that there's a book or movie adaptation of. I guess it sounds counterintuitive, but it can sort of teach you if you like the characters and the plot, and then maybe you'll enjoy the book as well. And Slow Horses is a show on Apple TV that's also really excellent. Cool. So you can kind of pair those and enjoy them that way.
I love it. I want to bring in one more caller before I ask my follow-up question to Ron. Stephanie from West Philadelphia is an elementary school teacher. Stephanie, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Yeah, I am really loving what other people are contributing also. And just, I think so often we talk about kids on screens and, you know, we hear that as often as like someone says, bless you lately. And I just want to say, like, when a child does find their confidence with reading, just seeing them like develop their own tastes and interests in text is like such a gift to witness. And then, you know, so often I talk to like other parents and children's grown-ups about like how to engage their kids as readers, and I often tell them like have your student catch you reading also. Like, it's so important for them to see us reading and engaged with literacy in that way. And yeah, I just wanted to say that. And also, like, when I'm out to eat at a restaurant and I see a kid like just so invested in whatever like chapter book they're reading and so like not aware of their surroundings, and it's just like it warms my heart in a way that like is kind of indescribable.
Yeah. Thank you so much. That was Stephanie from West Philadelphia. But this goes to the question I have for Ron. And by the way, when I was growing up, my grandmother used to have this library in her room. It was just a room full of books. And they never policed my reading. Mm. I couldn't watch certain things on television, couldn't watch certain movies, but I could read whatever book I wanted. And that level of autonomy, like, it was very empowering at a very young age. And I read all kinds of stuff, probably I shouldn't have been reading, but we won't even go there. And so, you know, Ron, I wanted to ask you, what are some of the more popular books, especially for young people? So if you happen to be a parent and you want to suggest some of the things that are popular on the list, are there any things that are bestsellers right now?
This is where your indie bookstore seller comes in to play, because these people know their stock well. They're getting feedback from their readers all the time. Same with your public librarian. If these people are experts who trained all through their youth, they are waiting. They are so ready for your questions like that. Go use these experts. They're right out there in your community.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
God bless Stephanie. I get it. So right. And your grandmother. The important thing with kids is to let them read whatever they want. And I know it's expensive, but give them as full a library as you can so that they can discover what they're drawn to.
I got to give a little shout out. I'm definitely one of the people who like reads voluminously articles, right? Job, Cherry, we're reading articles all the time. And sometimes you read all day and then you're like, I just don't have time to read at the end of the night. That's not going to be how I decompress, because I've just read all day. But recently I was like, you know what? I'm going to read a novel. It was my wife's birthday, and so I bought us both copies of the Sally Rooney novel, Normal
Reading.
People.
That's good.
So I said, let's both read the Sally Rooney novel. You know, she's supposed to be like the it millennial writer. Let's check it out. I loved it. I read it very quickly. I thought it was great. Very engaging. I don't know if you have a thought on Sally Rooney, either of you.
Very romantic of you. I'm impressed.
does Sally pass the test? Do we like Sally?
Definitely. She's very highbrow and very popular.
Wow. And she's easy to read, too, like in the best possible way. You don't have to you have to think because of the characters and the themes and the relationship. But like on a sentence vocabulary level, her works are incredibly easy to read and understand. My students love her. They're like, oh, I read this in a night, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I want to read a couple emails. Alicia says, I love lunchtime reading. I am reading while listening to Studio 2 right now. Hey, multitasking out there, Alicia. It is pretty great. Steve says, I've read more novels this year than I have in a long time, though still less than I used to in my teens and 20s. And I wanted to ask you, as we have about a minute and a half left in the show, do you have recommendations for authors that people ought to check out? Because I used to be a big Octavia Butler fan, and I discovered her a few years ago, and I just went down the rabbit hole and just read Octavia Butler for like a year. Just was like every time I would just get a stack of them, and I would just read book after book after book. Do you have any authors that you would think that someone could just go down the rabbit hole of one of your favorite authors?
I would say Richard Powers and Barbara Kingsolver.
Absolutely. I love Anne Patchett. Definitely.
Beautiful writer.
I love that.
All right.
So I got a couple of authors now. Hopefully I'll be in a rabbit hole during the holidays.
I'm feeling inspired to read more. I don't know about you, Cherry. This was an inspiring hour.
Yes. And by the way, I read a couple more emails. Bernie says, when I was a kid in the 60s and 70s, the scandal was that kids were reading too many comic books instead of real books. Me, I liked reading books, but had to have my monthly Mad magazine to get my fix of cultural and pop political satire. So full circle.
All right.
Kids are always doing something not right. But we have our DJ of the day, by the way.
We do have our DJ of the day. So the big selection today is from Corey, who is hitting us with the Elvis Costello song, Every Day I Write the Book. So let's hear a little bit of that as we say goodbye to our wonderful guest this hour. Ron Charles reviews books and writes the book club newsletter for The Washington Post. Thank you so much, Ron.
Thank you.
And Shannon Reed, English professor at the University of Pittsburgh and author of Why We Read on Bookworms, Libraries, and Just One More Page Before the Lights Go Out. Thank you, Shannon.
Thank you so much.
All right, and thank yous are all around to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, Andreas Copes. Thank you. Al Banks and Tina Calique, who engineered today's show. You, our executive producer, Kevin McCory, and our audio general manager is Joan Isabella from Studio 2 at WHYY here in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCory. Thank you for joining us.